So you can either not take an action and let five people die, or you can take an action and choose to kill that one person. What do you choose?
Welcome to the Enterprise Intelligence Podcast with ShinyDoc CEO Jason Cassidy and VP of Customer Success Davey Sliman. How are you gentlemen today?
Very good. Set up in a cooler spot than normal. It's in where we live, somewhere between Toronto and Lake Huron. It is, you got two choices. It's either cool or it's really hot. So today it's one of those really hot days.
Yeah, we're up in Ottawa here. It's muggy and, you know, the air is very close and thick. And my dog was kind of unhappy with me this morning because he came back in quite hot. So now he's lying in a cold corner of the room there. So close to the air conditioner vent. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Smart dog.
Well, we're in this phase until the end of September, right? Then, so that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's that's Ontario in the summer, isn't it? So
yeah it really is. Yeah. So Davey, you got a first topic for us today.
Yeah, you know, I do. And I think, you know, you and I are, I would say, if not voracious readers of business books, you and I are both active readers of a lot of things, including business books. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, well, actually, it's not really about the book, but I'm going to start with a message about one of my favorite books of all time, which is called The Effortless Experience. It was written by a guy named Matthew Dixon. It's probably a 15 or maybe 20-year-old book at this point, but it's one of these books that I read as a customer success guy. I read it probably once a year, maybe not front to back, but, you know, choice chapters and that kind of thing. And I'll do a quick synopsis of the book, but then I want to relay it to something that was in the news this week that caught my ear and caught my attention. So The Effortless Experience is a book about how in the world of customer success, in the world of working with customers, we've all kind of had it wrong for a bit, that there's been this assumption that what you need to do at every turn as an organization is provide these over the top delightful experiences for your customers, so that it's just, you know, there are all kinds of great examples of, you know, the airline worker driving a stuffed animal to a child's house because they left it on an airplane. And that's great customers, you know, that's a great customer experience. And people going, you know, servers going over the top to deliver these incredible experiences. And with, you know, don't get me wrong, those are great stories and they warm the heart. But the whole gist of The Effortless Experience by Matthew Dixon is that, no, that is not what people want when they enter into a relationship with an organization, with a brand, with a company. What they want is they want the entire experience to be as effortless as you can make it, as painless as you can make it, as smooth, easy to buy a product, easy to use a product, easy to deploy a product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's sort of the context. I don't really want to talk a lot more about the books, but that, you know, great book, really recommend that people go check it out from whichever vendor you buy your books from. In the news last week was a great, it was, I think it was on CBC. There was a radio story that I heard about a fella who had, and this will mean something to people in, certainly in Ontario, had one of those old red and white health cards. Now, in Ontario, we have these health cards that let you go and use a doctor and go to the hospital and that kind of thing. But in 1995, prior to 1995, these were these old cards that just had your name on it and whatever your number was. And then after 1995, they started introducing photo ID. So your health card is a more modern card and it has photos and that kind of thing. And this story was about a poor guy who was born in Germany to, I guess, to, you know, Canadian parents, who moved as a child, possibly as an infant, to Ontario. And then through the course of his life, got one of those old red and white health cards And then from that point on, could not get himself, and he's in this kind of bureaucratic maze, could not get himself and still cannot get himself a photo ID because of the nature of his birth and birth certificates. And he's not able to show the province of Ontario that he's actually an Ontario citizen who pays Ontario taxes, who has an Ontario residence, has never really lived anywhere else, has a business in Ontario. And all I could think about the whole time that I was listening to this radio story about this poor guy who just wants to get a photo health card was that, well, it goes without saying, this is not an effortless experience, but that organizations do need to build into their systems some kind of like emergency parachute or escape hatch or something where there's like a button that says, you know, we've created systems and processes to deal with 99.9% of the use cases, but every once in a while, there's an outlying situation that a user of our system or a customer or a client needs to pull like the emergency button, and there needs to be some other mechanism for swooping in and handling all of this. And, you know, I think about this all the time in the context of how you help customers. You plan for the 80 to 90% of use cases that are totally normal, that everybody runs into, and you create documentation and videos and help guides, and you get, you know, almost everybody covered. But then you need a mechanism for dealing with the smaller percentage of people who have an outlying use case and they just need help. So I'm gonna pause. Jason, I know that this is a topic that you think about a lot. I would love to hear what you think. Steve, I'd love to hear. Maybe you have stories like this in your own life that you can think of. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's so health card is a stand-in for what I'm gonna say is a big problem. And I'm gonna state the following. Then sadly, the number one concern associated with the pivot to a new health card is fraud.
Sure.
Fraud is rampant anywhere that there's government money that can be entitled. So you perform a medical function or something like that, or, you know, somebody can purchase something using a card in which no money comes out of their bank account. There will always be fraud associated with that. So healthcare, good on you, Ontario government, or every other provincial government who looks after their regional healthcare, or anywhere else in the world that does that. Thank you for being a single payer. Thank you for making it so that if I break my neck, I don't lose my house. So that's great. However, every safety mechanism that's in there associated with ensuring restrictions as to who can get them is designed to, you know, prevent fraud. Mm-hmm. And I get it. But the systems themselves then get designed to say that anybody who tries anything or does anything that's not on the rail of the system is fraud.
Right.
Okay. And it's not true. Yeah. We know that not to be true.
Yeah.
So don't treat everybody who's an exception as fraud.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because it's probable, and I don't know the exact statistics, but I'd be willing to bet that every exception that comes through and eventually gets resolved, of all of them, way more will not be fraud than actual fraud. Good if they can catch some fraud. That's nice. However, there's lots of fraud still going on. So your whole idea that we're going to catch fraud by making everybody go down a particular rail is bullshit.
Yep.
It's not true.
Right.
So the idea, so I'm going to take it back to just accept all of the premises in the syllogism that you're putting up. It is true that the system itself, there needs to be a rail, and then there absolutely needs to be, how do we hurry up an exception in this rail that involves human decision making for things that ultimately anybody would agree are perfectly reasonable.
Right.
And unfortunately, that second piece just doesn't seem to exist for all sorts of, you know, the big established, especially government type of systems.
Yeah. And there's an irony to that. Like the organizations out there that should be caring the most for people are the ones that seem especially bad at this. Weirdly, you know, private companies who have a commercial financial interest in keeping you happy as a customer, because a happy customer not only continues to pay their bills, whatever those bills are, but they also recommend you to other people. You become a brand, effectively like a brand ambassador. So, like, you know, a great example would be a business that wants to keep a customer who falls off of one of these rails. By having that emergency eject button that I was saying, it's like, okay, you know, our chatbot, our AI chatbot couldn't fit you onto one of our five rails. So we're going to boot you to a real human who's going to help sort this out for you. And the real human is going to be not only knowledgeable, but they're going to be empowered to make a choice about what happens next, including deciding whether you're trying to defraud the company or you're just caught in one of these weird loopholes because you were born in Germany and you never had a Canadian birth certificate and you need two pieces of photo ID, but you only have one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know?
Yeah. And so many angles to take this. It's so like, I almost like to checkpoint the conversation to say, yes, we agree that if there's a process that's on a rail, we need to have this human, you know, ability to have an emergency side quest to then bring in anybody else who's not on the rail. And then, like, quickly, I'll just mention motivation with respect to this one, because I think it's somewhat unique in that when you have single-payer healthcare, mm-hmm. all of a sudden the person receiving the service is not the customer. The customer right. is the government of Ontario in this case, right. and the provider is the doctor, so or whatever medical. And it's not like they don't care about their patients. They certainly do, but they care because they took an oath to care and they were kind of trained to care and they got into the profession in the first place because, you know, you can make some money by doing some good things. Mm-hmm. But you are not the customer as the consumer, as the person who's going to see the doctor, getting the treatment or whatever. The government is the customer. So in all cases where the customer is not the one receiving the service, the person who's receiving the service is going to get their butt kicked around. Mm-hmm. And that is quite frankly why, you know, like, airline industry is notoriously bad, is that, you know, healthcare has notorious, it's actually notoriously good. Like, when you think in the grand scheme of things, we're way better having the system that we have compared to, you know, some alternatives. So, however, when you look at the every exception to that, is that our system good? It is always predicated on the fact that you're not actually the customer. So your wait times are too long and, you know, the people fall through the cracks, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think we can almost park that and just say, yes, it's ambiguous who the customer is. Therefore, the people get treated like crap.
Yeah.
A tech example of that actually is like Facebook or these types of companies who, you know, the customer now is the advertiser for Facebook. For it's sure. not the people. The people are the product. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we treat the people like crap. You know, like we stop being beneficial to the people mm-hmm. because they're kind of hooked on it. They're kind of stuck. And then all of a sudden the advertisers now are the customers of Facebook and the people are the product. So anyway, that aside, so let's go to the alternate example of companies mm-hmm. who can do things. And we have examples of this at Shiny Docs and it's funny. It's, so let's say a company signs on for Shiny Docs Pro 90 days.
Yeah.
And it takes them, man, just through whatever reason, it takes them a month to get up and running.
Yeah.
They paid their, you know, their 10,000 US or 13.5 Canadian or whatever it is, and they're generally happy. But they rush in that 30 days in the middle. It's like, man, we got to get this done in the next 30 days. Otherwise, Shiny Docs is going to cut us off. And then, so you get to the almost to the end and they're like, man, we love you guys, but I don't know if we have enough information to make this purchase decision to mm-hmm. lock in for an annual subscription in the last 15 days. It's like, meanwhile, and I'm putting words in your mouth, Davey Slimmons, they're going, hi, I run customer success. Mm-hmm. This was perfectly reasonable exception to our 90 days.
Sure.
We can extend yeah. you 15
right.
days. Like, it's, we don't want to be exploited. We don't want you yeah. to perpetually be in this loop of, oh, we're almost there, we're almost there, and you yeah. can't do it for a year and continuously get value. But something reasonable, 100%. Say, we'll bump you 30 days to get you over the line, and then we'll start your annual contract. Easy.
Yeah.
On an exception by exception basis.
That's a great example that brings it right back to certainly to the world of IT and very specifically to Shiny. We do that all the time where it's like somebody will say, gosh, you know, Joe was sick. We lost Joe, our key person for this project for, you know, 3 weeks. And it's really put us kind of behind, you know, we'll look, you know, a human being, you know, the account executive at Shiny Docs, myself, will happily extend that out just to say, yeah, take a little more time and, you know, play with this stuff and make a decision about this, because it doesn't materially change things on our side. And it, all it does is help the customer, right? Make a decision. So yeah, great example. And that's a, you know, tying it back to my super fast book review at the beginning. I mean, that is all about making it effortless and easy for your customers to make choices, right? So to make choices and also use what it is that they've purchased, whether it's a sneaker, a t-shirt, or software, right? So brought it full circle.
Yeah, and this hits home, because I mean, like over my lifetime, I probably interacted with several thousand customers, and just with Shiny Docs, it's mm-hmm. hundreds. And there are a couple of examples where we've boomeranged customers before, where we found out that they didn't feel comfortable asking. You know, it's like, do I really want to phone the airline and ask for something reasonable, because I know I'm gonna get a runaround? It's like, ugh, God. Yeah. So yeah. I'd rather just quit being a customer. And so that spills over to every interaction that they have, and they don't realize that they can just phone Davey or send an email saying, I know we're at this crossroads. We need to make a decision on a product right now. And what can we do? How can we be creative here? They don't even feel like doing it, because it's a negotiation, and negotiations are antithetical to effortless.
Yeah, 100%.
So if every time you force your customer to negotiate, you are putting another branch in the way of getting through the forest of trying to make a purchasing decision.
100%. And I would, you know, even say that there's a lesson in that for us and for everyone, in that if you can detect these things, and I would argue that most organizations can detect these things before it becomes awkward or uncomfortable for your customers, jump ahead of it and say, hey, you know what, we know that you're still working through some stuff. We've bumped up your license for another 30 days and take another 30 days. Right. So it's not a weird conversation. It's just something that happens. Right. That's another option. Totally. You're immediately taking the stress and anxiety of that conversation off of the customer's mind. In many cases, they're stressed already because maybe their leadership says, hey, how's this project going? When am I going to get some results for this thing? Right. So I really want to see it. And if you make people uncomfortable in the process and get them stressed out, you're adding unnecessary complexity to something that is actually going really well, you know, so, and just needs a little more time, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's so, and I think we need to capture that. This is our ideation on market positioning.
Yeah.
As we go here really quickly, is to let people know that a company like Shiny Docs is not a retail software company. Right. You don't just swipe your credit card and you get what you get. Yep. Is that you do have Davey Slimmons' team. You have access to people like myself. And I mean, we're very active industry experts on this, and we want you to have an amazing outcome. And it's not something that you can just like, technically, everything that we do, if you bought a little bit from Microsoft and a little bit from IBM and a little bit from some AI consultants and some other stuff, you could technically get everything our product gets you. But it's turnkey when you show up and you go, hey, Davey, guide me to my outcome. Right. Right. And every time I'm stuck, I, as the customer, I'm going to put my hand up and say, hey, I'm stuck internally because my boss wants to see X. And then we can say, hey, let's do X. Great example this morning of a customer they're deployed for the feature that they bought. They're really excited about that feature, and they're deployed for the feature that they bought. But they're like, we want to show our leadership everything else that we bought, because we're once we get the migration done and a couple other things, we want to show them everything else. And I threw back an email that said, well, let's get everything else just running on your laptop with some of your example data so that they can see everything that you've purchased. But of course, we're going to focus on your A use case, the number one, the thing that you've already got deployed. And I don't think they would have ever thought of that.
No.
I think it completely solves their problem. But they would have never asked. The only thing that they know to ask is, how quickly can we get 100% of the commercial deployment for 3,000 users up and running so that I can show it by June 14th? Mm-hmm. And it's not a dumb question. However, it is, you can only think out of the box in collaboration with your supplier. And if you're afraid to phone them up and say, I need to think out of the box here for a second, that's a problem.
Look, I totally agree with everything you've just said. I think there's unfortunately, there's a name for it. And I'm so sad that I can't remember the term that somebody coined for this, but there's an expression that's often talked about in the world of customer satisfaction and customer loyalty. I can't remember the exact term for it. I'll find it later and we can talk about it another time. But it's acknowledging the fact that your customer's relationship with you is informed, unfortunately, by all of their previous experiences with vendors like you, right? And you've seen flavors of this your whole life, where somebody you get off, you know, kind of on the wrong foot with somebody, and you've just met them as a customer, but you're already kind of on your heels a little bit. And you're not quite sure why, because you've been, you know, professional, you've been on time, you've been upfront, you've done everything well, as far as you can tell, but things aren't quite right. And what you come to realize, and sometimes they tell you this, you come to realize that they've been, you know, bitten or burned or the like from previous experiences. The airline stuff, I feel like we always pick on airlines, but they're such an easy target. Like, I'm predisposed to disliking any new airline because of all of the other terrible airline experiences I've had. So you might be an amazing airline with incredible customer service and I'm going to have an incredible flight. But the fact that you're an airline means that I've got my backup. I'm like, well, this is going to be terrible. And so, when I think one of the things, just to tie back to what you were saying about people being uncomfortable having these conversations, or they don't even want to start into it, I think they're bringing kind of the baggage of all of their previous experiences into that. And they're like, well, there's just no point in this. Why would I have this conversation with this vendor? I know how it's going to go. It's going to be terrible, you know? And it's just not the case, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's a recency bias, there'll be a more specific name for marketing or for customer success. But I mean, it's just a recency bias. Sure. It is a prejudice that everybody has prejudice. Like, I mean, you hear the word and you automatically associate it with race or something like that. It's not true. We have prejudice for all sorts of things. How we expect to have an interaction with an airline, with a software vendor, with a consultant, with a friend, with a spouse. Sure. We all have these preconceived notions how things are going to go. And when we need to ask for something that's off the rail, it's scary because you're negotiating. So I think we, hopefully that ties it right back.
It does.
The book review, the effortless experience is, can we take some of the negotiation away? Can we make it obvious where we're willing to yield and bend and help so that you can just keep moving without any stress?
Yep.
Is perhaps the effortless experience. I'm doing a book report right now, having not read the book,
but I think
I get a sense of
it's
it.
It's a great book.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's, I got the link to it up on my screen here right now. So we'll come back to it.
I feel like Matthew Dixon probably owes me a small royalty check. Cause I've talked about this book every year of my life since I first read it. And, I did meet him at one point. I should get in touch with him and tease him about it and say, hey, here we are talking about your book still. So he's written a lot of other great stuff too. So, yeah.
There you go. So you need to get davy-sliman-1971.ca and have your affiliate link on there.
100%. 100%.
You will. You'll make a ton of dough and so will the author. Yeah.
Super cool.
Awesome. Good first topic.
Thanks, man.
I like it because it's top. I mean, so obviously we talk about things that are on our minds because of customers or the industry or whatever. And it's another thing that the thing that came to me is that I have been predicting rate cuts. now for a little bit, and the Bank of Canada and the U.S. Federal Reserve keep saying, no, it's just, oh, we got to flatten inflation and these types of things. And I'm not going to go into the minutiae of what I've observed in the economy. But finally, the Bank of Canada is actually issuing a rate cut today. Obviously, it's the right move. And I'm going to talk about it specifically in the context of people purchasing software and people doing IT projects. It is 100% predictable when interest rates go up, how businesses shut down innovation projects and all that. And unfortunately, we don't pay attention to it because we know that we're valuable. We know that people deep down want to innovate, but they're a little afraid of it, and they know they're going to get criticized for it. So what ends up happening is, as money becomes freer, boards and CEOs are like, get more access to money. They need to spend it somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's when the purses open up to doing innovation projects. So where I'm headed with this is, need is always there.
Yep.
Okay. And the desire to innovate is always there, but the money is not there when you need it. The money is not there when you make the best business case. The money, I'm going to suggest, is only there when interest rates start falling and people feel comfortable spending their money somewhere.
Right. Yeah. By the way, was that just announced this morning? I hadn't heard. Or was that last night?
It is not announced yet, but I mean, everybody already knows. So it's on the news right now, saying today the Bank of Canada will announce their first rate cut in blah, blah, blah. So and everybody's excited about renewing their mortgage later because it's going to be
somewhat more affordable. I have kind of a two-part comment to what you were saying. First off, 100%. I think there's a, just as people often talk about kind of consumer confidence or even investor confidence, there's a behavior certainly at the board level and at the executive level of a lot of public companies and privately held companies where your confidence goes up when interest rates go down. And your, what I mean by your confidence is your confident spending, as opposed to sitting on a mountain of cash or sitting on a dwindling mountain of cash, goes, you know, down as interest rates go up and goes up as interest rates go down, because you have confidence in your ability to place a bet. You know, and this is, you know, we didn't go too far down the analogy last time when we did our innovation episode around the connection to gambling that you have when you talk about innovating. You know, that, you know, innovation for you and I have talked for years about how we've been in experimentation mode. We've been experimenting, certainly in the early days of Shiny Docs, and in the early days of what we used to call the cognitive suite. We were fully in experiment mode with a lot of customers. We were fully trying things out, right? And so these innovations that we were doing were essentially very strongly educated guesses about things that we thought customers would find value in. And so when you're placing a bet by putting human beings and their time and the money associated with those people and resources like hardware and IT infrastructure, you're betting on these things as being a worthwhile pursuit to pay off. And in surprise, surprise, they do sometimes. And when they do, then you say, great, that really worked. Let's double down on that. That's what you do when you're gambling. You double down on it. And we're going to invest more in that thing that seems to have value and seems to be working. So then why should it be surprising then when interest rates come down and money is easier to access and easier to borrow and a whole bunch of other things, why should it be surprising then that is when innovation can happen? Because people feel confident in their ability to, if not make the right bet, at least recover from a bad one, you know? So 100%. So that was part one of that was my answer to your comment. The other thing is, I have a personal story about this, which is for years and years and years, early in my career, when I first moved to Ottawa, I worked at a place called 240 Spark Street. It's 235 Queen on one side of the building, 240 Spark Street on the other side of the building. And I worked for Industry Canada, government department. Now, the notable thing about 240 Spark Street is that Sparks, for people that don't know, is a pedestrian street. There are no cars on the street. You can go out there at lunch. It's quite lovely. There's park benches and, you know, you can sit and have your lunch, and it's just people walking by. It's a very narrow street and there are no cars allowed on. So people go out there all the time at lunch. And 240 Spark Street is directly across from the Bank of Canada. So it was really common, especially on a day like today, nice warm day, for me to go out and eat my lunch on a bench sitting beside a whole bunch of Bank of Canada economists and lawyers and the like. And I won't say exactly what I've heard, but the things that you hear when you're sitting on a park bench listening to Bank of Canada economists talk is really interesting. So a personal story about the Bank of Canada for people that want to get the scoop. Go and have your lunch on Spark Street on a sunny day and you might hear some really neat things. So
yeah, it is. I like the anecdote, and we can't take anything away specific, because it's difficult to, the general theme that I like that we're touching on is, and it goes back to the whole innovation thing. Like, innovation sadly isn't its own reward.
No.
It's almost something that you luck into during the window in which you are allowed to invest in it.
Yeah.
And those windows are fixed. They're designed by people at that Bank of Canada, at a Federal Reserve, And so, we complain. It's, you know, we talk about, well, Canada is only, our GDP is 75% of the United States. And we complain that there's not enough startups and innovators and all this kind of stuff. What can we do to try to stimulate more creativity in our economy? And at no part in that conversation is this, in my opinion, abject fact of, okay, this access to capital at particular times only happens at particular times that is wildly predictable. And when you restrict it at particular times, then you should expect stifled growth.
Yeah.
We all know these things, but we just never talk about them as part of the innovation economy. We think that innovation is just something that keeps rolling all the time.
And that it's going to happen no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, no, then there's a lot of what's there. And we need to be sensitive to that with our customers.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, no offense to our customers, they don't know. They just don't know. Like, they come to us and they say, hey, we know for sure that we need to do the thing that you do with us.
Yeah.
And hey, we're going to work on budget. And meanwhile, we deep down, we know like their access to budget is going to be directly proportional to interest rates on that day.
Yeah, the belt tightening becomes universal. And, you know, it's kind of the whatever the inverse of the, you know, the rising tide, a rising tide floats all boats. It's the inverse, like, well, a sinking tide sinks all boats as well, then, I guess, you know, because during those periods that, as you say, are super predictable, you kind of can't expect any other behavior because the belt tightening is universal at that point. And obviously there are going to be exceptions here or there. You're going to have renegades or people that kind of want to buck the trend and say, okay, well, during this really tough economic climate, we're going to double down on something that nobody else is double downing on. I suppose that's like a weird kind of like short position that somebody could be taking on innovation, saying when everybody else is tightening their belt, we're going to invest in all this stuff. You know, I think that's probably very, very rare. And instead, what I suspect happens more often than not is that people have all of these great innovative ideas that they just choose to park until such time that the investment climate looks better. There's like I've still got this great idea. The great idea is still there. We've come up with this amazing idea for how we're going to do X or Y, but this isn't the right time. It's not the right time to go look for investors for this. It's not the right time to go look for customers for this. We're just going to park it, which is unfortunate. but as you say, predictable.
Well, it's different. It's unfortunate, and unfortunate isn't a word that does it justice, I think, because the issue is let's say that you're a smaller economy somewhere that is happy to cheat.
Sure.
Meaning we're going to take a risk on this because the downside's low and the upside is high. So you wonder why a lot of great innovations come out of smaller economies somewhere. I'm not going to name specific places, but I know for sure that we've talked about different regions in the world where it is, it's not a top seven in the world economy. And they continuously have these innovative companies that come out and these innovative leaders that come out of it because there's no downside to them to innovate during economic downturns.
Right.
And the governments are willing to just throw money at it and give them lots of exceptions on taxes and stuff like that because there's no downside to it. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the stronger economies, it becomes the Hunger Games, like, it's, you know what I mean? Or the Running Man, where it's just, we're going to just slaughter anybody who's not killing it. And it's so, like, I mean, here's a basic example is in Canada, the only place that a small business can get a loan from, you can't get a loan from the bank. That's just doesn't exist. So you go to like BDC.
Yeah.
BDC has got, it's Davey's money and Steve's money and Jason's money that we lend out to people and they expect a return. So as interest rates go up, we know for sure that there's going to be less buyers, right? Every BDC loan is tied to interest rates. Yeah. So it's like, the prime lending rate plus 10. So therefore, you are guaranteed to get punished most aggressively when during the toughest economic times for selling.
Right.
And then when everything's great, it's, you get this little window of everything being great.
Yeah.
So is that the right way to spur innovation? Probably not.
Particularly not when things are like bad. It's easier to have that conversation when things are good. When things are bad and you know that, there needs to be an alternate approach and an alternate, sort of like we were tying it to the earlier conversation, that's off the rails. You've got a rail that works great in a good economy. The rail is fantastic, but the off rail use case is when interest rates are high, investment is down across the board, people are sitting on their money, da 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 da. You need a second rail, like almost like a different, like this is the way, don't want to specifically call out BDC, but like if we're using the BDC example, there needs to be a BDC rail for like when things are great and a BDC rail for when things aren't. And they can have completely different terms and, all kinds of different stuff that you can do, because they address different needs. They address completely different needs in the economy. So.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting by any stretch that if we've talked about BDC, BDC's fine. Mm-hmm. They're executing the exact plan that you sign up for. So I'm not saying in any way that they're bad or there's anything that's their fault or whatever. No. They're fine. They're a bank and they lend you money at agreed upon rate and then they expect you to pay it back. We've never missed a payment on any debt that we've ever had. So, we're fine. We're in good standing with everybody and everybody's happy. I'm just suggesting if that's the only mechanism that we have, it's antithetical to the way that other economies could cheat, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like you talked about who's this sneaky player who's shorting the market and doing the investment with something that they know is going to be innovative during a downturn. There's no real mechanism to do that unless you have your own capital.
Right.
And we've asked the question a bunch of times. It's like, do the people with the best ideas always have the capital?
No,
obviously not. Yeah. So is there a mechanism to do it? Not obvious. So we rely on lucky timing and these types of things in order to keep people going. Mm-hmm. So anyway, short story long, I like where we took that.
Yeah.
That conversation because being very aware that interest rates drive innovation and purchasing is obvious. We all know it, but we often forget about it as part of the innovation conversation.
Yeah, I I love this chat, and I love the way it even links back to our, this is our plug for our, go back and watch the innovation episode. I did, by the way, for the record, I did get a little bit into the innovation episode rehash. Steve, you did a great job of that one. And for those that haven't checked it out, it's well worth a listen. We covered a lot of different stuff in quite a wide ranging conversation. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. And you have a second topic?
Yeah, you know, so kind of, you know, it is a second topic. But I feel like I don't think this is a horse that has gone to the well too often, but we have talked about it a little bit. And I wanted to keep pulling on the thread because, again, this is stemming from some conversations that I've had recently with people that I know in the industry, not customers, but colleagues and former colleagues and people that I'm LinkedIn connected with and stuff like that. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'm hearing from people and I'm seeing them post online is, well, there's AI to do this, or I can't believe there's no AI to do this. And, you know, the AI is going to just solve this right away. And what I wanted to, you know, talk about and get your thoughts on, guys, is this perception that I have, and you can tell me whether you're perceiving it as well or not, that people, and it's probably because of, you know, Gen AI and things like ChatGPT and things like that stealing a lot of the, you know, kind of oxygen in the media, people think of AI as free. That it's like, oh, this is going to be free or insanely inexpensive. And so I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be able to use AI to, you know, get rid of a whole bunch of staff members and reduce, you know, my labor costs immensely because AI is free. Where did people get that memo? Why are people thinking that that's how AI works, that it's free? Because what we're running into and what I'm seeing people say is when we start talking about it a little bit, it's like, well, for some of the things that you want to do, you are going to need insane amounts of computing power. Who are you paying for that computing power? Who's paying for that computing power? Well, the AI is going to just do it, and it's just going to be fast and free. Oh, are you going to, at the scale that you're talking about, for the hundreds of millions of documents that you're trying to process, who's going to pay for that computing power? Well, it's AI. It's free. Nope. So somewhere along the line, and I think it's because of the generative stuff. I think it's because you can go to a Gen AI website and you can get Gen AI to make you a picture of your dog that looks like he's riding a unicorn. That was free, and that means that AI is free. Is there an education step that's missing where we need to train people on the idea that AI is still going to cost a lot of money for people?
Good question. It's there's this human element, and every time you do this, I always try to tie it back to, you know, just a bias that we have or something like that. And it is another example that is exactly the same phenomenon is people who haven't renewed their license plates in Ontario.
Yeah, right.
Because they know that they're not going to have to as soon as some legislation comes through. Mm-hmm. So they just don't do it. Mm-hmm. So people are happy to be offside on the law because they know at some point they will be onside with the law, mm-hmm. maybe.
Sure.
And there's a great example of that back in, I think it was in the 80s when we were kids, is that people were still being charged with opening their stores on Sundays,
right,
after it was made legal because they did it when it was illegal. So you broke the law when it was against the law.
Right.
And like, I mean, there was an overlap of a couple of years of people who were caught with, you know, like small amounts of marijuana still, sure, you know, being charged, despite the fact that the day that they went to jail, it was everything that they did was legal, but they did it when it was illegal. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is exactly the issue with respect to this AI thing, is it is not that they've even given enough thought as to how the hell they're going to do any of this BS that AI is going to do. But it's an excuse, yeah, to say, I'm not going to do something right now because magic is going to happen, right, and then I'm not going to need to. Yeah. So it is, I'm not going to go to the gym because I know I can just take
those. There's
going to
be a pill. There's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just magic's going to happen. So I have an excuse now to not take action.
Yeah.
Same thing with cloud. Like, I mean, yep. And I'm not, everybody thinks I shit on cloud. I don't. Like, I mean, there's a lot of examples where I would much rather just run an app than worry about the hardware plus the app.
Yep.
That makes complete sense. Okay. So, however, there's been so much of, well, we got to get everything into the cloud. And it's that same thing. It's like, it's somehow the cloud became the simple injectable that you just take instead of actually making good decisions. It's, I feel like all of these are aligned with, it's punting. It's the idea of future somebody, maybe future me or future somebody is going to deal with this. And I have a great excuse now to not deal with it. And the excuse of the day is AI. Look, AI is going to do this in the future. Therefore, I don't want to deal with it.
I don't want to deal with it. Or, you know, or to tie it back, that it's not going to cost me anything. Like, how many people would say that about cloud today? You know, cloud's, because you and I lived through the birth and explosion of the global cloud business, the SaaS market, cloud hosting, you name it. We absolutely lived through it and actively participated in the growth of this phenomenon. Early on, it was absolutely sold as it's basically free. It's just, well, and there was a time when cloud providers, certainly Amazon, certainly you know, Microsoft, eventually with Azure and others, offered very compelling pricing to get you into their cloud. We'll make it really appealing and really cheap for you to get into the cloud. I don't know that everybody who's there today still feels like it's the greatest deal in the world, right? So maybe that's what we're kind of also seeing as well with AI. It's like, oh, yeah, come on, we'll do a bunch of AI over here. As it turns out also, because somebody down the line still has to pay for this hardware, still has to pay for this electricity that's, you know, that all of the compute power that's going into crunching these massive quantities of data, somebody's paying for it down the road. And at some point, the bill has to get paid, you know?
Well, yeah. And are you willing to pay as well for the errors that it makes and the real capital costs associated with those errors? Like, I mean, there's, it is directly aligned with you. For, if you're familiar with the moral dilemma, the trolley problem.
No, tell me about the trolley problem. I don't think I am.
Yes. So Davy Slimmon is standing on the tracks and you have the ability to flip a switch or not flip a switch. And the train that's coming down the tracks will either go down track A or track B based upon your decision. Okay. You see that an out of control train car, a trolley, is coming at you. It's out of control. It's on its own. It's not going to stop. There's no human there. So you look at the tracks up ahead and you see that five people are on the tracks right now and you don't have time to warn them. So they're going to get killed by this trolley. Or you can switch it and put it on track B. Yay, you're going to save five people. But on track B, there's one person who is working on the tracks on track B who's going to get killed. Working on the tracks on track B who's going to get killed. So you can either not take an action and let five people die, or you can take an action and choose to kill that one person. What do you choose?
Yeah.
So, and it's complicated, of course, because, I mean, what's the value of each? Are these five people all criminals? Fine, we'll let them get. Like, I mean, it's, if it's a chain gang and they're bad people, maybe you go, fine, kill the chain gang. I'm not going to make
versus Einstein that, or Stephen Hawking.
Right. That's that. Yeah, that person who's working on the line is an honest person. So, I mean, that's, so let's take it back now to choosing to not take action today because you know AI is going to do it in the future. Is okay. We're choosing to not take an action right now, which means I'm choosing to not clean up my data and do the cybersecurity or do the privacy analysis. I'm choosing not to do better FOIA or ATIP request searches. I'm choosing not to. It's do things that are better for my wallet or for the environment by, you know, reducing the amount of storage that we're using. I'm choosing not to do a million things because, you know, like it's ambiguous to me who the trolley's going to kill.
Yeah.
Okay. But if I make the switch right now and I say, you know what, I'm instead of just magically saying that AI is going to fix a problem in the future, I'm actually going to say we have a real problem today with, you know, like it's producing the right number of records for a privacy request and we kind of fake it. So therefore I'm just going to fix that today.
Yeah.
You switch the trolley. Yeah. Okay. You're not going to say AI is going to magically do that in the future. You just put yourself on the tracks. Yeah. You know, yep. like it's instead of the letting the train just go, you just put yourself on. Now I'm accountable.
You've chosen to make a different path. And so your name's attached to that choice. And there's risk associated with that, right? So somebody can say, well, that was Davey who chose to do that new thing. And look how it worked out. Somebody got run over, you know?
Yeah, one person got run over. Yeah. But meanwhile, you're not considering the five people that would have got run over.
Right.
Like it's just the fact that you just didn't service this request. So yeah. And the things that like, I mean, if we think to specifically what we're servicing is like Quebec law 25 with iManage, it's, I mean, we're kind of the only game in town. Yep. It's great. And you're on the trolley. If you decide not to take action right now, then you're putting yourself in the crosshairs to be not compliant with this law that has big teeth. So, what game of chicken are you going to play? So anyway, short story long, that's where my brain went with it is taking inaction right now because you have a great excuse, which is in the future, AI is going to magically do it. Or do you take action right now and actually solve the problems that are in front of you?
Yeah. And taking it from where you took it, I think there's even a connection to this whole thread with crossing the chasm, with innovation and people that are on the curve of, you know, early adoption versus laggards. And you know, there are a whole bunch of people. Absolutely. I would argue that's probably the bigger part of the bulge or the bigger part of the wave are probably saying, well, we're just going to wait and see how this plays out because we don't want to be first or we don't even want to be second. We want to be 12th or something. Because we feel like the safest thing right now, especially in a down economy, is to keep our heads in the sand and do as little as possible, change nothing, and just hope that it all works out.
Yeah.
which
Oh, for sure.
Like, I mean, that's where most people are.
Well, and thank goodness in I'll give an example that I'm not offside saying this, like selling to like, let's say, a Canadian government agency. And I think every other government agency is the same way. The only thing they care about is who else have you done this for in the Canadian government?
Sure.
And it's this, I hate to introduce a new metaphor with 3 minutes left, but the Mexican standoff, if you've ever heard of that scenario where everybody's got a gun pointed at somebody else.
Every Tarantino movie.
And yeah, exactly. And so whoever has the courage to pull the first trigger, then everybody else gets shot. And it's the same thing with a government purchasing a new innovative solution.
Right.
Is they want somebody else to, you know, initiate.
Innovation and sounds great. You go first.
Yeah, you go first. ASP, very dangerous. You go first.
It's, yeah,
nice. Exactly. Yeah. It is, I think, all these things are kind of related to that. Like, I mean, I know your topic was why do people just say that AI is going to do it later? But I think it comes back to these ideas of, do you have the courage to actually make a decision to go do something right now? Or are you going to be part of the late adopter crowd who lets somebody else be courageous, lets somebody else be the hero? And, you know, like it's, what do you want to do? Are you going to flip the switch and go solve a problem or not?
You do it probably safely and comfortably, but you're also going to be paying retail for it. You know, you won't get the early adopter discounts.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. This is
fun conversations. And I'm glad that we poke at it this way is that because, I mean, obviously we want mainstream buyers to buy our software and get the amazing outcomes. And we do have lots of those and that. But it's we got to acknowledge that, you know, like it's when the early adopters have handcuffs on.
Yeah.
You know, like in tough money economies or these types of things, it is interesting. It puts everybody in a weird situation. So maybe that is the trolley problem that we have, is that you need to find a way to really keep fueling the early adopters, the people who haven't crossed the chasm yet, because the people who are on the that are going to get killed are the late adopters, and the early majority are the ones who are just going to get smashed by this runaway car, because without the innovators innovating, everybody else is going to get crushed when you know, like when that next big virus hits, whether it be computer virus or human, it's like there's all these things that will happen that take down society in various capacities. Yeah. If you're not continuously innovating.
Yeah. And you're flat. Let's find out. You're literally at a standstill when somebody's coming by you at a sprint and you can't catch them. Right. So
exactly. Yeah. So let's make sure that there's a steady flow of that early adoption in industries. And of course, back to the healthcare thing, let's make sure that, of course, we don't want to throw bad money at bad people who are scammers and stuff like that. But don't just assume that everybody's a scammer who wants to be an innovator.
If you're not on the rails of a specific process, that doesn't mean that you're not a valid part of the process. Then maybe you need your own rail, or there needs to be a channel for handling it. So yeah, I love this. Was a great session. We talked about a lot of different stuff, so it was fun. Cool. Different stuff that kind of all tied together. I love it.
Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
I think it's great. I think it's our superpower, to Davey's point, to manage to somehow tie together these topics every week. And again, I think we talked about this in the innovation episode to our listeners. We come into this with random topics. There's no real kind of like forethought.
We're not planning it.
Talk about that. Yeah. So, you know, it always impresses me how it just kind of like works together. So great job again, guys.
It's very fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks, all right, guys.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, we'll pick it up next week. Have a good one, guys. Enterprise Intelligence is a Shiny Docs podcast with Jason Cassidy and Davey Sliman, produced by Stephen Schuntz. Copyright 2024. If you would like to learn more about how ShinyDocs can make it easy to organize your content, protect your data, and make your users happy, visit shinydocs.com today.